The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
Not because
they're easy, but because they are hard.
Start by a list of 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Wilkinson. Broadcasting to 7 continents. Consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good evening, listeners. Welcome to a very special added show for the Space Show this week, Thursday night. And we are happy to be able to bring back one of our favorite authors, if not our favorite author, going back to the years when I was writing my doctoral dissertation. Frank White is with us on the fourth edition, if you can believe that, of The Overview Effect. Let me give out some information, and then we'll jump right into our discussion with Frank. Our toll-free number is toll-free 866-687-7223. Email, as always, is drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. You can also comment and ask questions via our blog, which is thespaceshow.com, all the way to the far right. For the upcoming show menu, open the first page, which is the Frank White Show. You'll see it there. And then comments and questions can be posted down at the bottom. As soon as you hit the send button, I get a copy of it and can work them into the program. So listeners, remember that our website newsletter is uploaded to our website, thespaceshow.com, upper right corner. The email newsletter went out on Monday morning. And if you want to subscribe to that, please make sure I have your email address. The next time we will send it out is early Monday morning as well. There is a menu in the upper left of our homepage, thespaceshow.com. So it has a Listen Live button. This tells you how to listen to the live programs like we're doing right now, plus MP3 archives on our website, and, of course, podcasts. If you have any questions, need some troubleshooting or help, please do email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com. Remember, all of our programs are archived, and that they can be rapidly downloaded or easily listened to right off of your device and our website. Don't forget, we also have a store if you're interested in Space Show logo wear. The best way you get to our store is to click on the pictures of Pepper listening to the Space Show, and she will take you to our Space Show store for logo wear products. Hopefully you'll find some items of interest. Everything we do is archived, as I said. Also, don't forget, we're a nonprofit 501c3 with One Giant Leap Foundation, which is our parent. And we depend on listeners just like you listening to this show tonight to support the Space Show. Remember, as a nonprofit, your support is tax deductible if you pay federal U.S. taxes. And if you're a California taxpayer, it's tax deductible here in California as well. If you have any questions about that, you can email me or ask whoever helps you with your taxes. I'm sure they can be more specific in how they respond to you. But your support is very, very important to us. It keeps the Space Show going. Very quickly, we also do have sponsors, and as this is a 60-minute format program, I want to shout out to our sponsors, Northrop Grumman, the Space Foundation, Astrox, AIAA, Moonwards, Celestis, and the National Space Society. On the longer show formats, remember they get a 60-second message read that they give me that promotes what they're doing. They have the banner ad going across our homepage, which they can change or modify whenever they want. And if you're interested in being a Space Show sponsor and having your message on all Space Show programs, including archives and forever, because so far all of our programs since 2001 are still archived, please email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com, and I'll be happy to tell you about our sponsorship options and our program. And we certainly appreciate those of you who do that. I have one other short announcement before we, three of them before we get going. One is John Jossie is with us tomorrow morning. And many of you know him as Fremont John, a frequent caller to the Space Show. He has lots of great things to talk about. So you don't want to miss his program tomorrow. Absolutely. And on Sunday, we have Open Lines. And you don't want to miss that either. In fact, on Open Lines, we want you to participate. And then I have one more short announcement. An opportunity, it may be an opportunity, has come up for me to relocate to Las Vegas, Nevada. And those of you who frequently listen to the Space Show know I have been promising, threatening, yelling, screaming, doing everything I can to announce that I want to get out of California. Well, I certainly still want to do that, although both my kids are here. But I am taking the opportunity in Las Vegas serious, at least serious, to start inquiry. So if I have any listeners in Las Vegas that hear this show and subsequent shows, I'll continue to make this announcement, please contact me by email, offline, drspace@thespaceshow.com. I have a million questions I'd like to ask you about living in Las Vegas, including how that hot climate works for a Siberian husky dog, because I'm going no place without Pepper. So if you are a Las Vegas or Las Vegas area listener, and you want to sort of share living in Las Vegas with me, please email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com, offline, off show, and I'll get a hold of you, and maybe we can strike up a conversation, and you can answer some of my questions. So our show tonight, our special edition show, features Frank White, who is the author of The Overview Effect, Space Exploration and Human Evolution, and it just completed its fourth printing. How many authors or books have we had on the 20-year space show history where there's been a fourth edition? I can answer that with one finger on one hand. And that's Frank's Overview Effect book. And I have it in front of me. It's got a great cover. It's, I'd say, close to maybe 2 inches thick. It's an incredible book. He's got, I believe, something like 17 new interviews, but I'll let him talk about it. If you've not read any of his books, here's how you can do so in one fell swoop. Buy the fourth edition, because it contains everything that's in the previous books plus the new material for the fourth edition. So you get four for the price of one. How's that? Frank, welcome back to the Space Show. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Thank you so much, David. I was just thinking that I was on this show a long time ago, and I think we both have forgotten how long it was.
I'm going to tell you how long it is.
Okay.
While you're talking, I'll go ahead.
Okay.
I have to look it up.
I just want to thank you because you were a believer in the importance of this whole idea, this whole body of knowledge, when it wasn't cool to be interested in the overview effect. And that consciousness, that awareness of this amazing experience the astronauts have, has grown and grown and grown, and it's become far more widespread. But you were there. You saw the value before that.
May,
I appreciate it.
Here you go. May 7th, 2003.
Okay.
And I started.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And
so.
the first space show program was June 13th of 2001. But I was aware of the overview effect because I wrote about it in my doctoral dissertation, which was published January of 2001. So,
right.
So when did you publish the first edition?
Well, now the first edition was 1987.
Okay, so that's the one
Very early.
One I was aware of and I mentioned. And then when did the second one come out?
Well, the second came out in 1998.
Okay.
And then the third was 2014. And I think it's worth just talking a little bit about that because I feel there is something in this book, and I've always put it onto the astronaut interviews, because I feel like even if my analysis of the interviews proves to be incorrect with years and years of evaluation, those interviews are what they are. They're the story of what it's like to be in outer space, beginning at the beginning with Mercury and then going right up to the International Space Station. But Houghton Mifflin, a mainstream publisher, took it on in the beginning. They were very hopeful they would sell a lot of copies. When they didn't sell a lot of copies, they declined to do the second edition. And then the late Kenneth Cox, who was an Apollo engineer.
Yeah, I know. He was on the show quite a bit.
A wonderful man.
Uh-huh.
He wrote the foreword to the second edition. And he told AIAA, I really think you have to publish this book. And they published two editions. And then, of course, Dylan Taylor is the publisher of the fourth edition through his new company, Multiverse Publishing. And in fact, I have to thank Dylan for that. And I also have to thank him because he has decided to print just about every book I've ever written. And that's a wonderful thing for me, that the entire canon, as he calls it, will be in one publishing house. And we really do have a trilogy now, which is The Overview Effect, Space Exploration and Human Evolution, and then the new Camelot, The Quest for the Overview Effect, and then the Cosmo Hypothesis, Implications of the Overview Effect. They all tie together, and, you know, they're now all being offered to the public through one publishing house, and I think it's fantastic. But, again, the book has never, ever sold an enormous number of copies, but people have believed in it and believed in its value. And I'm really grateful for that because I've jokingly said I didn't write the book to win a Pulitzer Prize, and I've been very successful at that. I haven't won anything, but I wanted to change the way people thought about the value of space exploration and the way people thought about life on Earth. And I'm beginning to think we're getting close to that.
Have you noticed a different perspective on how we think about people and outer space and life in space based on the nationality of the astronaut?
Yeah, I mean, I think that more and more I see people becoming aware of the importance of the space program, the space programs. I see people who are not necessarily, like you and I, members of the so-called space community, beginning to say, oh, yeah, Frank, you know, I just heard about, what was that thing Elon Musk launched? And, oh, yeah, I just heard that they've got reusable rockets, and I heard an astronaut speak, and I believe people are becoming more attuned to the fact that this is a remarkable moment in human history where we are about to become a multi-planet species, and we are benefiting in ways that we didn't expect to, in the sense that it's changing our awareness of who we are and where we are in the universe. And so some of the more some of the less concrete benefits of space exploration and development are beginning to seep into society as a whole, which is, of course, what I think the space show is about and the book is about, which is to share the really great importance of this moment in history.
What is different in the fourth version, and do you think there'll be a fifth version and a sixth version? Are you still doing astronaut interviews? Are you still growing the book series?
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of things I would say about what's different. One interesting development here is that when I do a new edition, I read the entire book front to back. I read every word of it. I read every interview. And in part one and part two of the book, which are really the history of the overview effect, and then using the theory of the overview effect to look ahead into large-scale space migration. Incidentally, I like that term, space migration, because I think it brings out the idea of large numbers of people leaving the Earth. But I don't change part one and part two very much. I do edit out anachronisms, like discussions of the Soviet Union, for example. But I'm willing to change part one and part two. And every time I do it, I think I'm going to make some big changes this time. And then I don't. With this edition, what is most significant is the new interviews. I'll just mention a few things. One is, for the first time ever, I interviewed three astronauts in the act of being in outer space. I can't say they were experiencing the overview effect because they weren't in the cupola, but I interviewed three astronauts while they were on the International Space Station. And that is a great interview. I mean, there's just something different about talking about an experience while it's happening rather than after it is over and you're looking back. And then I also interviewed several active astronauts. And this, I have to say, NASA invited me to Johnson Space Center to do this. And I interviewed the three on the ISS, and then I interviewed seven active and former astronauts in a studio at Johnson. And incidentally, that turned into a series called Down to Earth. I want to urge everybody to go on YouTube and put in Down to Earth NASA. There are 19 short videos, and there's one long documentary or half-hour documentary. These bits really bring out the astronaut experience quite beautifully.
Frank, you already have a phone call. Do you want to go keep talking for a few more minutes, or do you want to take the caller?
Oh, let's take the call. If people want to talk, let's talk.
Hi, caller. Welcome to our program tonight. Who are you and where are you, please?
Hi, David. Hi, Frank. My name is Jeff, calling from North Carolina. Go Tar Heels.
Okay.
And, Frank, I love your book. It's a classic in my eyes, and everybody who's involved in the space program should read it. Whatever version they want to read, they should have it on your bookshelf. I'm very interested in the whole concept of developing a philosophy of space. Mm. Like, there are different philosophies. There's a philosophy of religion, philosophy of mathematics, philosophy of science. But what we don't have, really, is a philosophy of space. And I think your book is an important kind of first step in doing that. I also like your book, Cosmohypothesis. I think that's a great second version of that.
Yeah.
And I think maybe your next book should be maybe getting a collection, you know, of essays from different philosophers from all across the spectrum and ask them to write an essay about what they think, how important space is to them. Why should we develop a philosophy of space? Two other areas that I think you might want to look into is transhumanism and the overlap between kind of the overview effect and space migration and transhumanism.
Yeah.
And also the idea of cosmism. You've touched a little bit on cosmism in your books. But Ben Goertzel and Gillo Prisco have kind of new versions of the idea of cosmism. And I think they're both strong advocates for a strong space program, space migration program. And I was just wondering how you view those two views, cosmism in its current effect, and transhumanism as possible additions to, you know, kind of the overview effect.
Could I ask, just so we're using the same terms, when you say transhumanism and cosmism, what are your definitions of those two?
Transhumanism as Max Moore, I don't know if you ever saw his principles, transhumanist values, or Nick Bostrom. what they've written about transhumanism, kind of just the enhancement of the human beings to make them, you know, more intelligent, more prosperous, you know, better physically. And cosmism, I'm referring to the new version of cosmism, not the old Russian cosmism. I think there's too much mysticism and supernatural things in that. But the new book by, well, it's not a new book, but a book by Ben Goertzel on the Cosmist Manifesto, he lists like 10 principles of modern cosmism. I don't know if you've ever seen that or not. But
I haven't, although I know who he is.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Well, let me try to touch on those. First of all, thanks for your kind words, Jeff. Let me start with the philosophy of space exploration. I agree totally. And it's a journey I've been embarked on ever since I wrote the first edition of The Overview Effect. And I've told this story before, but it was the beginning of my interest in that topic, which was that I was finishing up the first edition of The Overview Effect, and the Challenger accident happened. And I was watching David Brinkley, This Week with David Brinkley. He had Isaac Asimov on and Tom Wolfe, and he also had George Will, who was a commentator. And they were talking about the fact that, we thought space flight was routine, but now we see that it's dangerous and people die, and is it worth it? And George Will said, I'm thinking we've had some very banal reasons for space exploration, like nonstick frying pans. And Tom Wolfe said, you're right, you're exactly right. Our country has never had a philosophy of space exploration, and we need it. And I just said, okay, well, I'm going to work on that. Even though I was not trained as a philosopher, I was trained as a social scientist, so I thought, okay. And then I started thinking about it, and the first thing that struck me was that all of our reasons for space exploration are self-centered, human-centered. I asked myself, how does it look from the point of view of the universe? Why has the cosmos nurtured and brought evolution on Earth to the point where we can actually become a spacefaring species? What can we give to the universe as well as take? And that began to be the basis of the philosophy that I put out in both The Overview Effect and the Cosma Hypothesis, which is that humans do have a purpose in the universe. And my hypothesis was that we are bringing life, intelligence, and self-awareness to larger and larger portions of the universe, and that this is really why we are doing it. And I'm not the only person saying that. There are other thinkers who've come to that same conclusion. But the important thing about it, Jeff, from my point of view, is that as we spill out into the rest of the solar system, a philosophy will guide us, just like many people talk about the Prime Directive in Star Trek. That is basically a philosophy as well as a directive. And it's extremely close, at least, to the old version of cosmism, which is this idea that the universe, everything in the universe is alive and to some extent self-aware. And, we're not just moving out into a dead place, but that we're part of an interconnected whole. So I'm very interested in cosmism. And as far as transhumanism, I'm interested in that as well. And I do believe transhumanism is going to become much more important in the sense that The solar system, which is where we're going to go first, is not really, how should I put it? I don't want to say it's hostile to human beings, but it's not supportive. There's really no place off the Earth we can go where we can live without artificial support. and we're either going to change the solar system to be more like us, or we're going to adapt ourselves to this very challenging environment. And I think a little bit of both is going to happen. And I think another aspect of transhumanism, as I understand it, is to think that Homo sapiens is not the top of the evolutionary chain. There's more evolution to go, and that's certainly in the subtitle of my book.
Yeah,
so, Jeff, you asked some great questions. I don't know if I answered them or not.
Oh, you certainly did. Certainly did. I wholeheartedly agree with almost everything you just said. And I would highly encourage you to get in touch with the, you know, maybe Max Moore from the Transhumanist Group or Nick Bostrom and talk with them. And I think they would agree with a lot of what you just said. So I'd like to see all those.
So thank you for the idea for another book. I think it's a great idea. Have some real philosophers think about space, migration, and what it all means from their perspective.
Exactly. Especially across the spectrum, maybe even the pros and the cons, just to get a wide view.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
That's the great thing about philosophy. It's open-ended in that way. Pros, cons, everything is there.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, thank you for answering my questions. I'll get off the phone and let other people call in.
Thank you, Jeff,
okay.
for the call.
Thanks for calling.
Listeners, Jeff has gotten off of our call, and our phone number is available to you again, and let me give it to you. It is, if I can find it, interesting, I can't ever find a damn thing, 1-866-687-7223 is our toll-free number. Tell us about some of the 17 new interviews that are in the book.
Okay, so I think the ISS interview is really good. It was with Nick Hague, Anne McLean, and Christina Cook. And they had some just really interesting answers about what they were experiencing in that moment. And then among the other active astronauts, I interviewed Reid Wiseman, Don Pettit, and Tracy Caldwell Dyson. Reid Wiseman had some interesting points that he made. In particular, one thing I'm seeing with the younger astronauts is they're viewing the Earth more and more as a living organism. And Reid talked about that. Don Pettit was really interesting. He's the oldest active astronaut. I believe he's 65. He is still certified to fly, and he just loves being out there, and he loves being in a challenging environment. And he told me if he could go to Mars tomorrow, he'd go. He's ready. Tracy Dyson just had some beautiful, almost poetic words about the experience. She used the word, it grieves me to try to figure out how I can share this with people. And the Down to Earth series has a great 3-minute piece with her. Among retired astronauts, I had the honor of interviewing Charlie Bolden. Charlie, of course, was a Marine aviator, fighter pilot, 4 times on the shuttle. He was the first African-American NASA administrator. And he just gave a great interview about his experience. And there are so many parts to it, I can't even summarize them. But one was when he first got into orbit and saw Africa. And he'd done a lot of research on his ancestry, and he wanted to look down and see where his ancestors came from. And then he had that astronaut realization, there are no borders or boundaries there. It's really hard. It's really hard to see places. And he is also one of the astronauts who said to me that on his first view of the Earth, he cried. And he said that it just brought home to him that he had grown up being so aware of the differences between human beings. And when he experienced the overview effect, he didn't use that word, but that's what happened. He experienced the overview effect, and he realized all of those differences are not important in the face of what makes us similar. Scott Peresinski is the only astronaut who's also summited Mount Everest. That interview is there. Richard Garriott, his father, was a NASA astronaut. He always thought he'd be a NASA astronaut. I mean, here's a guy who grew up, Neil Armstrong lived down the street kind of thing. Just always thought, you know, I'll be an astronaut. But then he found out he didn't have the vision, the visual capability. And Richard went out and made enough money to go on a Russian spacecraft to the ISS. And other really great interviews, Jean-Francois Clairvoy, a French astronaut. He had so much to say about Spaceship Earth. And what would happen if we really, really thought of the Earth as a spaceship and ourselves as astronauts on Spaceship Earth? Karen Nyberg, who was an active astronaut when I interviewed her, she's retired now. She's married to an astronaut. And, you know, we have this new phenomenon of astronaut couples. And we talked about that. So those are just some of the people. I mean, you know, I could go on and on. And then I also interviewed Trevor Beatty and Sally Cruising, who are going to go on Virgin Galactic. And I got a sense of why do they want to do this and what's behind it. And I think in terms of my future work, interviewing so-called ordinary people who are going to fly instead of professional astronauts is going to be very important. To document what's different about their experience, because they are really going to have the overview effect experience for the most part, whereas the professional astronauts generally didn't go for that reason. They had a mission, and all of the insights that we've talked about, seeing the Earth from a distance and indeed seeing the entire cosmos from that vantage point, wasn't really their purpose in going. So that's just some of the new interviews, and it's the reason the book is twice as long as the third edition. The other thing is, in talking with Dylan Taylor, the publisher, I said, do we want to have a word limit on the interviews? And he said, no, if it's valuable content, let's just go for it. And so many of the new interviews are much longer and go into a lot more depth. And then the other thing I did was I interviewed Charlie Walker, whom I had interviewed back in 1985 or so. He had gone on 3 shuttle flights. And he remarked to me that he had not seen his experience as spiritual at the time, but over time he's come to be more comfortable with that terminology. And he also narrated a BBC radio program on the spiritual dimensions of the overview effect. So that's another new addition to the book.
Were the 3 on the space station your favorite, or can you tell us who a favorite was and why?
You know, that's like asking who's your favorite child.
Or who's your favorite space show guest. I get that all the time.
I'm sure. In a way, the International Space Station interview is the favorite because it's unique. It's a milestone. I had never had an opportunity, really, to ever interview people while they were there. And so it really does stand out in my mind. And it certainly is a very unique conversation. I don't know. I mean, I think it'll be interesting, David, for readers who will be able to read that interview and ask themselves if it really stands out for them, because I wonder if it seems so significant to me, because while I was doing the interview, I was at Johnson Space Center, and I actually had to go through the entire protocol of, you know, calling the ISS and then bringing them on, and I had to do it in exactly 20 minutes, and there was a lot of heightened, excitement about that interview as well. And of course, I knew that that NASA was being very generous to give me that time, so I wanted to make the most of it. So I think that was very special.
I have a question on email from Todd in San Diego. And, excuse me, Todd says, in talking to people, do you find that they have a single purpose for wanting to go into space, to experience space? And did that single purpose get accomplished, or did they meet their goals? I'm not talking about their mission purpose or their NASA purpose or their NASA goal. They must have had a purpose or a goal or something about them that they wanted to go into space or become an astronaut to begin with. Did they complete that goal? Did they get what they expected?
That is a great question, and it's something I've started off all my interviews, especially in the fourth edition. I've started all of my interviews with that question, and the answer always varies a little bit in the verbiage, you know, the person talking about it. But there is something about everybody who answers that question where there was a calling, I would say, an inner calling at an early age that they wanted to become an astronaut. And with a couple of the people I interviewed at the Johnson Space Center, I think this was probably true of Karen Nyberg and Reed Wiseman, maybe, and certainly Tracy Dyson. I think Tracy and Reed in particular, they had this desire, they wanted to become an astronaut, and the Challenger accident happened. And instead of turning them away from being an astronaut, it heightened their wanting to become an astronaut. Because as a kid, they saw how the nation mourned for these astronauts, and they thought, this is important. This is something I need to do.
So,
and every one of them who had this inner drive said to me, the experience not only met their expectations, it exceeded their expectations. And I just remember Karen Nyberg in particular saying, you know, that it met her expectations and more. And the other thing that you see and is brought out, and this is really brought out in the documentary I mentioned, Down to Earth, one of the astronauts I interviewed was Mike Forman. He applied, I believe, 8 times to be a test pilot. He went to the Naval Academy. And he always wanted to be an astronaut, you know. And he grew up in Ohio, and a lot of the early astronauts were from there. And he always wanted that. And he thought, okay, I go to the Naval Academy, and then I become a fighter pilot, test pilot. And he got turned down something like 8 times to be a test pilot. Then he got that, and then he got turned down something like 7 times to be an astronaut. And I said, did you ever think maybe that wasn't the path you should be on? And no. The answer was no. And I think that there is something in certain human beings. It may be genetic. It may be something else that we can't quite identify that brings people to wanting to do this. And, David, you know, I don't know how many of our listeners probably know exactly what I'm talking about. There are so many people I've talked to who said, when I was a kid, I wanted to be an astronaut. And those who didn't do it are now part of the space movement. You know, they want to help this massive migration off the Earth. And I can't come up with a better term for it than a calling.
I thought about that a lot. Because I'm one of those.
I know.
You know, I wanted to be a space cadet in space, and I don't know whether I wanted to be in space more or meet aliens more when I was a little kid. You know, and it's a close one. I may have actually wanted to meet aliens and ETs more than going into space. But as I learned more about going into space and seeing the astronauts in high school and college and learning some fields were difficult for me and learning that I was dealt some vision issues that still from time to time crop up today, going into space wasn't really a calling for me because the only way to go into space was to be a government person, probably from the military. Mm-hmm. And I was in the Navy and They rejected all my applications for pilot training, even though I had a private pilot's license. They completely rejected all my pilot training and naval flight officer training applications for lack of math and for eye problems. So, but I still had the love of space, and of course that finally came out much later in my life. When I decided to go back to school and finish my PhD program, and I wrote it on space tourism for the most part. And then I learned about, maybe even being a private astronaut isn't for me because I'm claustrophobic or I'm this or that, or, you know, I'd love to go to Mars, but I don't want to be gone from my family or my dogs or my kids for X number of years or something like that. Or the money would be too hard. So getting into, and I wasn't an engineer, so the radio show was about still playing a role in space and in my dreams. And, you know, maybe living it a little vicariously, I don't know. But
yeah.
I've been working on my space tourism chapter for the Space Show 20-year book. And it's interesting because as I look at covering space tourism for 20 years, and I talk to many of the private astronauts who had gone to the ISS station on the program, and I've talked to many people who are drawn to space, and I used to do a series called Our Spiritual Connection to Space, and there really is within a large number of people, even if they aren't aware of it, a calling, a connection, something maybe genetic that brings you to space. And the interesting thing is it means something kind of similar to all of us who have that calling. So, you know, you want to be a space tourist, I'm sure you're going for fun, for adventure, for all of that. But if you keep drilling down on that person, you can get them to talk about what it really is all about for them to go to space. And in many ways, Frank, it's almost like going home. I know to a lot of listeners that aren't there yet, you know, that's going to be pretty wacky. But it's not just a calling. It's not just something that you feel spiritually connected with. It's like you're going home and you want to go back to where you came from. Not home, like you're going home at night. It's like going back to your roots, kind of. You know, maybe like a TV show called Roots for Space instead of Roots. But I think it's in a lot of people, and it's been in a lot of guests that I have talked to, including the space tourism people, although it's really hard to get deeper with the space tourism people than fun, adventure, we want to see the Earth from space, you know, from orbit, that, you know, we want to see this, we want to do that, want to have microgravity, want to have sex in space, want to do this or that. You really got to sometimes work with people to get them to sort of own up to the fact that it is a calling, and that there's something about you want to go home. You want to find out where you came from. You want to know more about that. And
I agree. And even with current astronauts, if you read the interviews, you'll see several astronauts talking about how comfortable they felt in what is really an alien environment for humans. But they felt comfortable. They were happy there. And in a way, what you're talking about is exactly right. They felt more at home. And this is a bit of a mystery to understand how that can be so. The other, the other aspect of what you're talking about is something Al Sacco Jr. said to me. Al Sacco Jr. was one of those guys who tried again and again and again to be an astronaut. He did have the training. He's technical. He's an engineer type in terms of his background. But he finally made it, and he got one shuttle flight out of it. And in my interview with him, he said, people ask me, you know, why do you risk your life to go there? And he said, I tell them it's in response to a dream and a vision. And he said, I tell them about the astronaut secret, and every astronaut knows this. And he said, do you realize that, first of all, we're part of the whole human family, but it is something that goes beyond being a citizen of the Earth. We are actually citizens of the universe. And that phrase has stayed in my mind for a long time, which is that for humanity, we think of Earth as home, but really the universe is our home. And in a way, our destiny is so much grander than what we've imagined while we've been confined to this one single planet. And in a way, you know, I think it's okay for it to be a mystery. It's great to keep questing and questioning and trying to understand it within ourselves. And I guess that's why I've interviewed over 40 astronauts. I'm trying to understand it. But on the other hand, maybe it will always remain somewhat mysterious. And we'll just see. We'll see. I think that a lot will be revealed as humans begin to live permanently away from the Earth. We still haven't had that experience.
You know, it might be interesting for you to, in future books, throw in some interviews with non-astronaut people within the industry and explore what we've been talking about and see how many you find and what they say about how they connect to space.
Well, I didn't know your history, which you just talked about, and that would be the kind of story that would come out. And what I see, I have talked to a few people who've told me a similar story, and it's almost like they feel they're drawn to the space environment. They want to get there somehow, and whether it's a physical problem or they're not good at math like me, whatever it is, they couldn't take this most obvious route, the astronaut route. But however many detours they took, they never gave up on being somehow involved in the space movement. And there are a lot of people like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, there are a lot of people out there who are like that who have not identified themselves yet. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, too, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've met a lot of people who are at the moment not fulfilling their dream. They're not involved in the space community, but you start talking to them and they say, you know, I know what you're talking about. I really have had that same feeling all my life.
Well,
and that's why I think we are on the verge of large-scale migration, because I believe there's a lot more people who want to do that than we really know about.
So the first time I read the first edition of the Overview Effect, and then I probably worked with the second edition too for my show and for my dissertation, if the third edition wasn't until much, much later. But one of the other things I was going to say is it gave me, and probably a lot of other people too, permission to be okay with our feelings about space, because we did keep them to ourselves. I mean, I didn't go around with Space Cadet on my sleeve and I want to call home with ET. I mean, nobody talked like that. You know, when we had early interest in the space program, we'd talk about the rockets and we'd talk about the spacewalk and the technical stuff about it with Gemini and, you know, docking and, you know, in the early days of this thing. We didn't talk about anything like we're talking about now. But the Overview Effect opened up and gave permission to be okay in these areas and to talk about it. And to really identify with it. And so I think your book made a huge difference in many, many different ways. But one of those ways was giving a lot of people over the years permission to be open about space and maybe even to go ahead and take the leap and pursue space as a possibility of a career or close to a career.
Yeah, and I meet people like that every day. And it's very gratifying because, as you know, or I think you know, I did spend quite a long time thinking that the book had almost no impact. For a long time, and I think it's largely because we didn't have the kind of communications we have today, but, you know, for a long time I just thought, well, I wrote a book and I'm proud I got it published, but it didn't have the revolutionary impact I wanted it to have. Because I was thinking, I'm talking to these astronauts and they're telling me this amazing stuff. And how can people not be affected by it? But for about 20 years, really, I thought, no, it didn't happen. But now it did. I mean, I meet people all the time who say, I read your book, it made such a difference, and I'm so pleased that you wrote that book. And I would say once again, I'm definitely, the heroes of the story are the astronauts to me, because the other thing I want to always point out to people is that even today, spaceflight is not routine, and every time an astronaut goes out there, they're risking their lives, and it really is dangerous still. And maybe that won't be true in the future, but it is still dangerous.
Still today.
And, yeah.
You have another call. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Hi, caller. Welcome to our program tonight. Who are you and where are you, please?
Hi, it's Tony Cook calling from Pasadena.
Hi, Tony.
And
good to talk
hi.
To you again.
Uh-huh. So, I was wondering if actually both of you saw the interview with the crew, the Dragon Crew 1, after their mission. They had a press conference where they all talked about their mission. Did you happen to catch that?
I've caught part of it. I wasn't able to catch all of it, but I know what you're talking about, yeah.
I saw it, but go ahead.
Okay. I would highly recommend it actually to all space show watchers. It was not the typical, there's no platitudes or anything. It was a very enthusiastic crew. A lot of them talked about their relationship with the Earth after seeing it in space and all. The surprising part was Victor Glover, and he was one of the most enthusiastic in talking. But the last question was, are you all ready to go back? And two of the astronauts immediately put up their hands and, you know, waving and stuff. But Victor Glover just sort of sat there with this smile like, sorry, folks. So everybody stopped their kind of wild celebrating and turned to him. And he said, and he started shaking his head. And he goes, no, you know, that's it. And I don't want to mangle it. You got to watch it for yourself. But he talked about a letter that I guess is taped to the airlock, and it was by one of the space shuttle people who died in the Columbia accident, but who had been on the space station. And it's admonishing the astronauts to remember that the Earth is their home, and they'll appreciate it all the more after they've been in space. And he said, I really felt that, and, you know, I realized that this isn't where I want to be. You know, it's like, I've got to be back on Earth. And,
Interesting. Yeah.
And it was really kind of a stunning end to a really, really fascinating interview. And
uh-huh.
So I'd recommend it. It's a 39-minute interview, but it's actually really worth watching.
Yeah, I'd love to watch that. I did not know he had said that. And I was
surprised actually because I followed it pretty carefully, but when he came out with that, it really
changed the whole mood of it. Did you save the link to it that you can send us?
I'll try to. It's easy to find if you Google Dragon Crew 1 interview, and it's a NASA interview. It's 39 minutes long, but I'll try to find it.
Okay. And if you do, I'll post it with the show. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Tony, when you were before you retired from Griffith, did Griffith ever do overview effect programming or have people talking about it or sharing experiences like this?
Not really. I'm trying to think. The one astronaut we had kind of repeatedly recently was, he's there right now, and I'm blanking on his name. But he hadn't been in space yet, so he couldn't speak. But now he's been twice, and he's on the space station right now for his second time. I'm sorry, I'm blanking on his name. It's really bad. But
okay.
But so he couldn't speak to it because he hadn't been there yet.
Been there. Okay.
Yeah. And I've mentioned before, you know, Al Warden, who told me that, right in a talk I was at, and I talked with him a little bit more about it afterwards, that he wasn't terribly impressed by what he saw until he was in the shadow of both the Earth and the Moon, and then seeing only the black, you know, cut of the Moon against an incredibly bright Milky Way, did he suddenly realize not only was he part of something pretty incredible, but the whole universe is pretty incredible. And so he felt actually sort of beyond the, you know, Earth, you know, effect. So.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah.
But that was the only direct one I had contact with like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Anything else, Tony?
No, I think that'll do it.
All right. Good hearing
from
you.
I'll send you the link.
Thank you very much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Listeners, there's still time if you hurry and you would like to talk to Frank. And our telephone number is 1-866-687-7223. Email is drspace@thespaceshow.com. Are you doing any Zoom meetings and programming based on the overview effect that listeners should know about?
Well, we're beginning to put together quite a few programs or appearances like this one to talk about the book. And there's nothing really immediately on the horizon. I will be on an Institute of Noetic Sciences meeting at the end of the month. And then over the summer, there are several virtual meetings coming up. But we're really just beginning to gear up to try to get the word out about the fourth edition. So as always, David, I came to you first.
Well, we certainly thank you for that. Do you look for new a new market? Do you look to mostly existing people with the overview effect? Are you trying to reach out to new people to just discover you for the first time? Not necessarily you, but the overview effect for the first time.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, I'd say two things about that. One is that we have some interest in translations of this edition, and we've never had a lot of translations in the past. The first edition was translated into German, but beyond that, we haven't really had any. And I see that as a huge market, which is to say the rest of the world. Obviously, many, many people in other countries can read English, but I think they would find the book far more accessible if they could read it in their own language. So we do have some interest in that, and we're definitely pursuing it. The other thing I would say is that I believe I've talked about this a little bit on other programs with you, but one of the concepts that grew out of writing the book from the very beginning was the idea of a human space program. And that whole idea was based on the sense that when you listen to the astronauts, you realize exploring the solar system and exploring the universe is too big a job for one space agency, and we really needed more of a global commitment to that. So I have now established the Human Space Program as a nonprofit in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and several of us are working on it. And we are trying to bring the Human Space Program to reality. And part of that is reaching out to organizations that are more involved, for example, with the environment or more involved with peacemaking. And we're really looking at getting beyond the traditional space community, and sharing the book with those groups is really an important move that we're trying to make. And that's part of the bringing the overview effect down to Earth movement, where we have people who are working to bring the astronaut experience to virtual reality, or I'm involved in a project where we're working to use the overview effect in conflict resolution processes. And there are just a lot of people who want to take this fundamental idea and then see, can I put it in another setting and really use it? Can I really apply it in a situation here on this planet? So, yes, definitely trying to reach out beyond the current constituency.
Excellent. Is any of that open to the public? Can people find out about it or participate or anything like that?
Yeah, well, the Human Space Program is really in startup mode. There's not too many ways to connect to it at the moment, but there will be. And there certainly, if you read the fourth edition, I do mention several people who are involved in bringing the overview effect down to Earth, quote unquote. So, yeah, there are opportunities evolving and developing now. And, you know, definitely as we get the Human Space Program up and running and we have more opportunities for people to get involved, it's really meant to be a central project for everybody to get involved with.
Frank, we talked about an hour. We're a little over that. Is there anything we should continue discussing? Have we overlooked something for the overview effect, or something more you want to add for the fourth edition?
Well, you know, David, I could talk all night about it. But I do think you've actually hit on an important point here. One of the things I would say in closing is that I know many of your listeners know about the overview effect. They know about its value and its importance. This could be something that you could share with friends who are not that interested in the traditional space exploration paradigm, but they care about the Earth. They could be interested in the astronaut experience, and it could be a very good way to bring your friends and your family into this incredible adventure. And I would also say, I really think there is an urgency right now in having people be aware of what's going on, because as you know, David, you've been studying space tourism for a long time. It's about to go from a futuristic idea to something that's really going to occur. I don't really think humanity as a whole is ready for the rapid changes that are going to start happening in the next 10 years. And we're just much more likely to make mistakes and not do a good job of it if there is this general lack of knowledge. So I think the book could be used to also be an educational tool to reach out to people who just don't, they don't think they have the calling, or maybe they do, and as you said, it will give them permission to open up about it. So, yeah, I think it would be nice if we could see this book get a little bit more traction than the previous editions have.
Well, maybe it will. There's a lot more ways, even now over 2014, to distribute ideas.
Yep.
and content and theories and things like that. And the space multimedia programming has just blossomed, maybe as a result of the pandemic, I don't know, but it's everywhere now.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of opportunities for people to find a path to the overview effect into space, and hopefully many will, and hopefully many of us can help guide to that path.
Well, you've done a great job of it. Your work is really important, not just for the overview effect, but for general awareness of what is happening, what is taking place, and the fact that our entire planet is moving into a phase that is really, it's been science fiction for many years, but it's reality now.
I have a final email for you.
Okay.
Sharon is in Salt Lake City, and she said, Frank, I have no clue how old you are, but it seems to me what's missing is you going into space and telling us about your overview effect experience. Any chance that might happen?
Yeah, I'm working on it. I'm working on a project I call Getting Into Space. And what I'm hoping to do is really to document it as a not just a bucket list experience where I check it off and say, now I've done it, but I'm interested in documenting it, really finding ways to share the overview effect with the world from my point of view. And it will be unique in the sense that I have spent so much time documenting other people's experience that whatever my way of reporting on it might be, it's going to be different, I think, because I've spent so much time thinking about it. So, yeah, I appreciate that. I'm hoping to have an announcement about what I'm actually going to do, you know, in the next few months. So I don't have anything that I can really specifically discuss tonight, but I'm definitely working on it, Sharon.
Well, I hope you make it, and I really would look forward to that interview. So
that'll give you an excuse to interview me again, David.
Well, I don't need an excuse to interview you again. When you have something
about. Definitely when I get there and get back, or even before, we'll do an interview.
Absolutely. And the book is available, I guess, at everywhere, Amazon, wherever people want to buy books, right?
Yeah, and also you could go to Multiverse Publishing, which is the publisher, but, you know, the ubiquitous Amazon is just as good as anything, and it's right there.
Can people get an autographed copy from you somehow?
Yeah, you know, anybody who wants to, why don't we do it like this? If they will let you know and you can pass it on to me, then I could arrange an autographed copy.
Okay.
Would that work?
Yeah. So yeah. Listeners, don't post it on the blog because I may not see it. So just email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com. Tell me you're interested in contacting Frank and you would like an autographed copy of the fourth edition, and I'll put you in touch with him. And
yep.
Maybe he'll make a special deal where you can get an autographed copy of all the editions and all of his books. So I'm making
yeah.
extra work for him, but that would be quite a cool collection to have. So
yeah.
We'll see if anyone bites.
Yeah, that would be the whole canon. That would be a lot of books.
Absolutely, but you never know. But maybe
yeah.
maybe you can use the proceeds to get Frank White to space. So
there you go. There you go. That's a good use of funds.
Absolutely. All right, Frank. Well, you take care, and listeners,
okay.
again, it's the fourth edition, The Overview Effect, Space Exploration and Human Evolution. I have it in paperback. Is it in hardback, or is it an online book, or is it just in the form I have it?
It's paperback and Kindle.
Paperback and Kindle. Okay.
Yeah.
Frank, until the next time, I'll send you the program tomorrow when I get it archived. And good work, and we certainly appreciate your being back on the Space Show, and it's really great to talk to you again.
Oh, same here, and thanks for everything you're doing, David.
Thank you, and listeners, thank you for your calls and emails. And come back for John Jossi tomorrow morning, 9:30 a.m. California time. Everybody have a rest of the evening as a good one. Stay safe and stay healthy. And as always, keep looking up. Goodbye from Frank David and Pepper, who just came in to say hello, and The Space Show.